Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
If you asked her when it started, she wouldn't point to the night she fought for her life. She would point to a face in a doorway. California, she was 9, the kind of age where adults still think they can soften the world simply by lowering their voices around you. A longtime family friend's husband had died suddenly. Heart attack, no long illness, no time for anyone to adjust. One week he was the warm, familiar presence who always made you feel like you belonged. The next week there were flowers and folding chairs and a hole in the air where he used to be. She didn't handle it well, not in a dramatic way. In the quieter way that scares adults more because they can't fix it with distraction. She stopped sleeping. She cried at odd times. She stared off like she was trying to see through things. Her grandparents, who had custody of her, did what they always did when she couldn't settle. They made room for her where they were. They let her sleep on the couch in their bedroom for a few nights, close enough to their breathing and the familiar creak of the house to make the dark feel less enormous. Their bedroom had an adjoining bathroom with 2 doors, one into the bedroom, one into the kitchen. At night, those doors were just part of the layout. Harmless. Ordinary. A place you didn't look twice until she woke up and saw a man standing there. Not a blur, not a shadow. Not the suggestion of someone in poor light. A person fully formed, positioned in the doorway as if he'd stepped out of the bathroom and paused. He was smiling. Half asleep, her mind tried to place him somewhere safe. She thought it was her grandfather. That made sense. An older man in a doorway checking in. But her grandfather was right there in bed, snoring steadily, beside her grandmother. The sound was so familiar, it was almost a metronome. She blinked, squinted. The room sharpened. It wasn't her grandfather. It was the man they had just buried. The realization didn't hit like a jump scare. It moved through her slowly, like cold water rising. She sat up, clutching the blanket, trying to make sense of what her eyes were insisting on. The man didn't move toward her. He didn't raise a hand. He didn't speak. He just held that gentle smile for a moment longer, an expression that felt less like performance and more like the last remaining piece of him. Then he turned away. Not fast, not theatrical, like someone leaving quietly so they don't wake the house, and he was gone. No footsteps, no sound, no fading outline. One blink, he was there. The next, the doorway held nothing but darkness and the faint line of tile. She lay back down and stared at the ceiling until morning. She didn't wake her grandparents. She didn't tell anyone right away because she didn't know how to say it without sounding like she wanted attention. But what stayed with her wasn't fear. It was grief with a new shape. Years later, when she thought about it, she still cried. Because she couldn't shake the feeling that it was his only way to say goodbye. And because goodbyes you can't explain are the ones that never fully close. After that, things happened in the margins of her life, small enough to ignore, frequent enough to change her. Walking to the corner store with friends, she would catch sight of something that didn't belong. An animal moving across the street that couldn't be there. A person stumbling along the sidewalk in clothes that didn't match the day. Each time, the moment she tried to look directly, it vanished. Like the act of focusing snapped the image out of existence. Her friends never noticed. They kept talking, kept laughing, kept moving through the world as if it were solid. She started doing the same. She learned to file it away, to step around it, to treat it like a private glitch in her perception, something she wasn't supposed to mention if she wanted to stay normal. At 12, her life relocated. They moved to South Carolina and the air changed, thicker, heavier, full of summer, even when it wasn't summer. The family bought a house built in the 1950s from the daughter of a woman who had recently died. The father had been gone long before. The house had the steady, worn-in feel of a place that had seen decades of ordinary life. She wanted it to be ordinary. But the first thing she noticed wasn't a sight. It was a feeling, watched. not watched in a way she could point to, not a specific corner or room. It was a pressure that came with her through the house as if attention clung to her like humidity. It didn't matter if she was in her bedroom or the kitchen or standing in the yard, the sensation stayed. Something aware, something patient, something quietly invested in her presence. At night, she heard footsteps in the attic and not the random settling noises old houses make, not the pop and creak of wood cooling, footsteps paced and deliberate as if someone were crossing the attic from one end to the other and back again, over and over. She would lie awake, listening, waiting for a parent or grandparent to get up and check. No one did. In daylight, it didn't always feel intense, but it never disappeared. Once, she was outside with headphones in, music loud enough to make the world feel far away. When a large black dog came barreling toward her, instinct took over. She ran, heart hammering, hair whipping into her eyes. She glanced back mid-run. No dog, no movement, no sound. The yard was empty, sunlit, calm, like the chase had never happened. She stopped and stood there with her breath tearing in her throat, trying to convince herself it was a neighbor's dog that changed direction. A trick of peripheral vision, a moment of panic making something bigger than it was. But it hadn't felt like a trick. It had felt like pursuit. A little later, she and her sister and a friend heard voices in the basement, muffled speech, human cadence, the sense of conversation happening out of reach. They went down together, slow and reluctant, only to find the basement empty and still. Then came a single, booming sound, heavy and sudden, like something large had struck the house from the inside. They ran upstairs without thinking, tripping over each other, breathless with the kind of fear that doesn't need explanation. After that, the house seemed to pick its moments. A door found open that had been closed. A brief movement in a mirror that didn't match her reflection. The impression of someone standing just behind her shoulder, close enough to make her skin crawl. It was never clear enough to photograph. Never constant enough to prove. It existed in that space where you could always tell yourself there had to be a rational explanation. Except the watching feeling didn't care about explanations. It stayed. She grew up in its shadow. She learned to live with it, and in a strange way, she started to believe that was just how her life was built. Thin spots, small overlaps, the world occasionally showing its seams. Then she turned 17 and something happened that had nothing to do with ghosts. Someone tried to kill her. It happened fast and it happened for real. There was a moment where her entire life narrowed to one decision, survive or don't. She survived. In doing so, she killed him. The authorities called it justified. People told her she should feel grateful. She felt something else instead. An aftertaste that never left her mouth, a heaviness in her chest that didn't lift with time. She didn't want to talk about the details. She didn't want to describe the relationship that led to that moment. She only knew that the event split her life into a before and after, and she didn't recognize the person who lived in the after. And then the watching began again, not like it had in the old house, as if the attention she'd always felt had finally found a name to wear, as if something had taken the shape of the man who'd tried to end her life and decided the story wasn't finished. And the worst part was that she couldn't tell where the fear ended and the haunting began. Because now they sounded the same when they moved through her body. She had survived him once. But at night, in the quiet, she started to wonder if survival had made him harder to get rid of. After the trial, after the statements were recorded and the language of self-defense was written into official reports, the world expected her to return to something resembling normal. She tried. She moved in with her boyfriend at 19, carrying only what she needed, and leaving behind the house in South Carolina with its attic footsteps and basement voices. For a while, the new place felt quiet in a way that wasn't loaded. There were no sounds in the ceiling, no mirrors catching movement that wasn't hers. If something shifted, it was small enough to dismiss. A razor sliding from the edge of the shower, a door that didn't latch completely. The kinds of things that happen in any apartment if you live there long enough. she told herself that the watching feeling she had grown up with was finally fading. It didn't disappear entirely, but it softened. It lost its sharp edges. Still, there were nights when she would wake abruptly with the distinct impression that someone had been standing at the foot of the bed. She would lie there for a moment, heart beating too fast, trying to listen for breathing that wasn't her own. When she reached for the lamp and flooded the room with light, nothing ever stood there. The walls were blank, the doorway empty. Her boyfriend slept undisturbed beside her. She rarely mentioned it. She did not want to build something out of fragments. 3 years passed. The relationship ended quietly. No violence, no rupture, just distance. She told herself that closing that chapter might finally close whatever else had been following her through life. Instead, the pressure returned. She began dating someone she had known for years, someone who had once simply been a friend. When they moved into their first apartment together, she felt the heaviness immediately. The building was not historic, not old enough to carry obvious stories, but the air inside felt compressed, as if something had happened there and left a residue no amount of fresh paint could fully erase. Nothing dramatic occurred at first. Just the sense of presence, steady, low, constant. Cabinets she was certain she had closed stood slightly open. Interior doors drifted inward without a draft strong enough to explain it. Objects shifted just enough to make her question her own memory. She began to pay closer attention. One evening, she and her sister decided to walk through the apartment deliberately, as if acknowledging the atmosphere might force it to respond. Her sister carried an EMF reader. She held a PKE detector, half in skepticism, half in defiance. They stepped into one of the bedrooms. Her sister stopped mid-stride and stared at the far wall. A dark shape moved across it, detached from any visible light source, sliding from one corner of the room to the other, before dissolving into the shadowed edge. It was not fast, it was not chaotic, it was controlled. At the same moment, the devices in their hands reacted. The EMF reader spiked erratically, lights flashing in rapid succession. The PKE detector buzzed and flickered with no obvious electrical source nearby. Neither of them spoke for several seconds. The silence felt heavy, charged. Later that night, lying in bed, she studied the faint stains that bled through the apartment ceiling despite repeated coats of paint. The management had attempted to cover them, but the darker patterns kept resurfacing in irregular shapes that resembled spatter more than spill. In the kitchen, one cabinet door bore the outline of a poorly filled hole, the wood around it subtly splintered beneath the paint. She had traced it once with her fingertip, imagining the force required to leave that kind of mark. When she asked about the unit's history, the answers were vague: previous tenants, minor incidents, renovations, nothing serious. The explanations never quite settled in her chest. 6 months after moving in, she had the dream. It began with something ordinary. She was watching her sister's two young boys. In the dream, something had happened to the youngest while he was in her care. She did not see the event unfold. She simply understood that he was gone. Then he stood up. He walked through the room calmly, speaking in the same tone as his older brother. Even his eyes had changed, shifting from their natural brown to the same green as the older child's. The wrongness was immediate and complete. She felt panic tight in her throat. "This is not how this works," she thought. "This is not possible." She called her sister in the dream, trying to explain what was happening, trying to describe the impossible transformation unfolding in front of her. When her sister arrived, frantic and confused, she turned to check on the older boy. He stood near the hallway, staring. His eyes were no longer green. They were yellowed, murky, wrong in a way that felt deliberate. There was no warmth in them, no childhood softness, only something ancient and cold pressing outward from behind them. The air in the dream felt intent. She woke up gasping, her heart pounding so violently it hurt. Minutes later, her phone buzzed. It was her sister. They spoke in fragments at first, comparing details cautiously. The younger child, dead, the shifting eye color. The older boy's yellow stare, the feeling of something else wearing familiar faces. The details matched. When she ended the call, she sat in the dark and felt the watching presence settle around her again, closer than it had ever been before. For the first time, she allowed herself to consider a possibility she had avoided. What if this was not tied to a location? What if it was not random? In the days that followed, she sensed it constantly. Not just the vague awareness she had known as a child, but something sharper, more defined. A presence that lingered at the edge of rooms, just outside direct sight. One afternoon, walking down the hallway of the apartment, she caught a glimpse of a man in her peripheral vision. The build was familiar, the posture unmistakable. She turned, the hallway was empty, but her skin prickled in recognition. It looked like him, the man who had tried to kill her. The professionals would say trauma, hypervigilance, flashbacks manifesting in shadow and suggestion, the brain replaying threat until it felt external. She wanted to believe that explanation, but what unsettled her most was not the image itself. It was the sensation that followed, not memory, proximity. As if something had stepped closer and was waiting to see whether she would admit that it was there. The first time she saw him clearly, nothing in the room moved. There were no slamming doors, no sudden temperature shift, no objects thrown across the floor. She was standing at the kitchen sink in the late afternoon light, rinsing a glass while the blinds cast thin shadows across the walls. The apartment was quiet in an ordinary way. The distant hum of appliances and faint traffic beyond the windows grounding the space in something familiar. She felt it before she saw it. The same tightening in the air she had known as a child, but more concentrated now, more focused. The sensation settled between her shoulder blades and refused to lift. She didn't turn immediately. She told herself it was memory. Trauma replaying itself through muscle and nerve. She had been told that was possible, that the brain could project danger long after the danger had passed. The feeling did not fade. Slowly, she turned her head. He stood near the hallway entrance, as he was not solid in the way a living person is solid, and he was not transparent either. He seemed to occupy space the way heat does, subtly distorting the air around him. The outline was unmistakable. The height, the shape of his shoulders, the familiar tilt of his head. He wasn't smiling. He wasn't enraged. He simply stood there watching. Her chest tightened so sharply she had to grip the edge of the counter to steady herself. She blinked once, hard, expecting the image to fracture. It didn't. The silence in the apartment stretched thin. She could not make out every detail of his face, but she did not need to. Recognition settled into her body before her mind caught up. "You're not real," she said quietly, her voice more controlled than she felt. The air did not shift. The figure did not react. For a long moment, neither of them moved. Then the shape seemed to glide sideways, slipping toward the edge of her vision, rather than walking away. Instinctively, she turned her head to follow the motion. The hallway was empty. The kitchen returned to its ordinary proportions. The hum of the refrigerator resumed its place in the silence. The late light fell exactly as it had before. She stood there for several minutes, breathing slowly, waiting for something else to happen. Nothing did. That night she did not sleep. She lay awake listening to the apartment settle, cataloging every faint sound and distant movement. She reminded herself that trauma can alter perception, that hypervigilance can blur the boundary between memory and environment. She wanted to believe that explanation, but the encounter had not felt like memory replaying itself. It had felt like proximity. In the days that followed, she began seeing him in fragments rather than full form, a suggestion of his outline at the edge of a doorway, the faint impression of someone standing just behind her in reflective surfaces. The watching feeling intensified when she was alone or tired, or when her thoughts drifted back to that night at 17. It was as if something responded to vulnerability. One evening, after catching another glimpse in the hallway mirror, she stopped pretending she could ignore it. She stood in the center of the living room and spoke into the quiet air. "If this is you," she said evenly, "you don't get to stay." Her heart was pounding, but her voice did not shake. "I survived you. You don't get to follow me. The room remained still, yet the atmosphere felt charged. The overhead light flickered once, then again, before settling into a steady glow. It was a small reaction, something that could be explained by wiring, by coincidence, but the timing felt deliberate. She did not scream or retreat. Instead, something steadied inside her. A realization that had been forming for months finally clarified. Whether the presence was trauma given shape or something external borrowing his form, it behaved the same way. It hovered. It tested. It waited for acknowledgement. And if it needed acknowledgement, then withholding that acknowledgement changed the balance. That night, she closed the bedroom door and turned off the lights without scanning the corners of the room. She lay down and focused on the steady rhythm of her breathing. The watching feeling returned faintly, like a shadow at the edge of the mind. She did not turn toward it. She did not address it again. Days passed and the sightings became less defined. The pressure in the air thinned gradually, like fog lifting without fanfare. There were still moments when she sensed something nearby, but it no longer pressed inward. It lingered at a distance. Once, walking down the hallway, she caught the faintest outline of a figure in her peripheral vision. She kept walking without turning her head, and the outline dissolved on its own. Over time, she began to question whether the presence had ever truly been him. Perhaps it had simply chosen a shape that would elicit the strongest reaction. As a child, grief had worn a gentle face in a doorway. After violence, fear had taken on a more familiar outline. Maybe the phenomenon had always adapted. That possibility was unsettling, but it also carried a strange clarity. If something fed on fear or recognition, then refusing to provide either altered its ability to remain. She still feels it occasionally, a brush at the edge of awareness, a weight in a quiet room that fades when she declines to engage. She has not seen him clearly again. Sometimes, late at night, she wonders what stood in her kitchen that afternoon. Trauma echoing outward, a fractured memory insisting on form, or something older that had followed her since childhood, shifting its appearance to match whatever would hold her attention the longest. She does not claim certainty. She only knows this. Whatever stands at the edge of her vision now has never crossed the boundary she set that night. It lingers, but it does not step closer. And for now, that is enough.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.